All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning and welcome to the 59th episode of Matinee Talk. I am one of your hosts. With me as always,
Julian Owens.
Also joining us today for this movie review, we have with us
Brett Leipziger.
How's everyone doing today?
I mean, so far so good. I think it's really good so far. I can't complain. What about you guys?
I mean, it seems like movies are coming back.
The weather is nice. We're not in a freezing cold or a sweltering heat just yet. So here in Austin, Texas, at least we are all doing good. Today we're going to be talking Mortal Kombat, HBO Max's newest drop for straight to streaming. Before we get into our review, however, we've got a little bit of numbers, a little bit of stuff we can look at. What do we got?
So I guess before we talk about Mortal Kombat, I guess the biggest thing is, which we wanted to get into, was, is this thing with HBO Max's same-day premieres actually working? And just looking at some of the numbers here, because there's no numbers to report for Mortal Kombat, because Mortal Kombat is still going on. It's this week as we're recording this Sunday. So as of now, I can honestly say it's pretty interesting to see these numbers for all of the, well, three of the five movies that were released on HBO Max as of now. So the one that I wanted to start off with was the one that I said that needed to do big numbers for them to try to give Zack Snyder a contract. So the first week of Zack Snyder's Justice League coming out, they had, was it 2.2? Yeah, 2.2 million households watching Justice League. Not finishing it, but watching it, popping it on and trying to turn it on and watching it, which isn't bad. It's not bad, but it's not great. I mean, it's not great either, because Wonder Woman came out with 2.2 as well. And then the first episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier did 1.7. So it's not the greatest and brightest thing for you, right? However, the movie that blew it out of the park, and I was completely wrong about in our last episode, was Godzilla vs. King Kong. 3.6 million. Beat out most of the things that was on Disney Plus, besides WandaVision's first episode. So I was thoroughly surprised, and actually, out of all of the movies that Warner Brothers have put out for their HBO Max same day release, this is the most profitable movie so far, and actually the top grossing movie of 2021. So, is it working?
Are they not killing theaters?
So it's like, I think, in a sense, you can look at both of these numbers right now and say they're doing good. I wouldn't say it's like mind-boggling bigger as what we assumed it to be, but it's good numbers to say that their model is somewhat working at this point, at least on the streaming side of it. Is theaters dying? I don't know. Oh, well, last thing is, sad to say this, ArcLight and the CinemaDome in LA were officially closed of business last week. So is it killing them? I still, slowly but surely, yes. But at least with Godzilla vs. King Kong, the grossing of that movie in the theaters alone kind of was the small injection that I think theaters needed. So I don't know if it's killing it, but it's doing decent enough to not say it's not going to kill it now.
I mean, I'll say definitely seeing a upward trend in folks wanting to do actual like theater rooms or media rooms in their home. More folks saying like, okay, let me invest, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 into a room in my house that I can devote strictly to watching movies and TV shows. And now I'm not paying, you know, you think of a, you know, a family of four, that's $100 plus. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you think about that extrapolated over the course of a year, even if you're an average moviegoer, which I don't know about you guys, but I would assume an average moviegoer maybe sees 5-6 movies in the theater a year.
Yeah, I was going to say 5-10 if you're being nice. 10 if you're being nice.
And then now you've got all these streaming services, which even the people who've cut the cord, they're subscribing to all of these services. So mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, let me invest in my home. Let me add value to my home. And now it's a place where I can go lounge in my pajamas, make my own beverage, make my own food, and chill in a comfy chair that I know is mine and not stricken with some sort of COVID.
Yeah. It just always begs the question of, would we have liked these movies more in a communal setting? Certainly something like Godzilla. Absolutely. As great as your home theater system is going to be, your TV isn't,
right,
a couple stories tall.
Right.
So, yeah, on that notion, too, like, we'll talk about it a little bit because we didn't do a review of Godzilla versus King Kong. Specifically, the fight with Mechagodzilla. Sorry, spoiler alert. Should say that now in advance. The fight with Mechagodzilla and Godzilla and King Kong was a moment I would wanted to see somebody with, like a community with. Now, don't get me wrong. You're right. People are investing in that. But I still love that community experience. Mm-hmm. Revealing Mechagodzilla like that and just wrecking havoc would have been nice.
And you have that water cooler talk in the parking lot, which is, can't be replaced when you're just chilling at home.
Yeah.
I agree.
And we have, we live in a digital age. You can't ignore the fact that cell phones are everywhere. And when you're comfy at home, and I think this was a big thing with Zack Snyder's Justice League, and I'm sure with many others, that one in particular I'm singling out because it's 4 hours long. But how many people can sit there and watch a whole movie without looking at their phone a couple times?
I agree.
Yeah, it is now my new pet peeve, which is watching these like new release movies, and if you're watching it with any, a small group of people or even by yourself, is that like that want or kind of that brainwashing to go to your phone and just like not do it, treat it like you are, in a theater and watching something for the first time. It's a delicate balance now.
It's a delicate balance. And I've run into clients in my business that I work. I build these theater rooms and these media rooms and design them. And I've run into people and I'm thinking about doing it with mine when I, buy a house. I'm going to put a theater room in there. Theater room, not a media room. There's a difference. Your 85-inch TV cannot replace like a 130, 140-inch screen with a projector. Right. I'm sorry. you do like a little, your own little like snack bar. You put a little basket there and say, hey, put your phone on silent, and you get to throw it in the basket while we're watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
And that's why I was like, I at least looking at this with HBO Max, and like I said, you actually seeing an onward trend of people investing into their homes and home theater systems. I still think when it's all said and done, depending on how this year, well, to be honest, there's not really, we'll talk about this at the end of Mortal Kombat, but I feel like without the remaining of the year, there's only maybe 3 or 4 movies that you will be like, I want to see this in a theater experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's the Hail Mary for the Warner Brothers, which is Matrix 4 coming out on Christmas weekend, right? I think that this is, again, I don't think that people are not, it's terrible for investing their money into that. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that with now we're not trying to spend, and I think this is what HBO Max is helping with a lot is, and we kind of talked about it off airs, a lot of people aren't trying to spend almost $100, $200 in a theater experience for one movie, right? And, I think what's going to happen now is they're going to have to be picky about what movies they're going to put on the theaters and what movies they're going to put on streaming. So onto that notion, I think that out of the 5 movies that HBO Max has released on the same day premiere service, right? Or 4, if you don't count Zack Snyder's. 2 of them, I probably would have wanted to watch in theaters. Well, arguably 3 because of Judas and the Black Messiah, because I love those independent films. But 2 of those, like, Godzilla versus Kong and Mortal Kombat, specifically what we're going to get into towards the end of Mortal Kombat, that's a theater experience I wanted to see, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of the movies that HBO Max has down the line, I'm looking, and as we talked about before countless times on here, is I don't know if I would want to spend another $80, $90 to watch those.
And you also think about something like this. I've heard fellow podcasters here in Austin, Double Toasted, talking about how they did go to a Mortal Kombat premiere. I think they got it into a screen like 2 days before the Max premiere, but then, of course, were not allowed to release the review until like the day before it came out. But apparently at the quote unquote regular theaters, like small popcorns have now jumped up to like $8-$9. And this is like the one that's where the bag is like the size of the palm of your hand. You're like lying. The kid size. That apparently at regular theaters is now at like $8-$9.
They're trying to recoup.
Or you can get the movie meal with the smaller popcorn, a little baggie of candy, and then a little tiny drink for like $15.
I was about to say, that would be $15, $20 at this point now. And you see, it feels like now what theaters are going to have to do is pick and choose their battles at this point. And it's ridiculous
A lot of that is it's knee-jerk reactions from the theater companies. They're like, we've lost so much money in the last year or so. Like, okay, how are we going to do it the way we've always made money, which is we're going to pump the air conditioning full of that scent of that buttery deliciousness, and then we know you're not going to be able to say no to $9. Or apparently from what one of the guys said, he asked about a beer, and the guy was like, oh, yeah, not bad. It's like 24 ounces for like $18.
It's an amusement park prices.
Yeah.
It's like,
unless Mickey Mouse is coming over here taking pictures with me, I'm not paying
$18 for that.
Like, I think, too, I think we're kind of waiting, too, because I think, you know, we're going to start to see in May some movies are starting to just will be strictly theatrical from the other studios. You know, will any of our favorite theater chains bring back any sort of subscription programs to get us back in the theater? That might be what's missing for me, having that desire to go see, you know, yeah, Mortal Kombat or Godzilla versus Kong in a theater. I watched those at home.
Pre-pandemic, the three of us were seeing everything.
Absolutely
everything. We had the subscription service, and I 100% did not mind with my subscription service for $20 a month going in once a week at least, and then having like a $15, $20 tab because I was getting a meal.
Right.
It's a nice chill afternoon. I'm by myself. I can just relax and watch a movie. Whereas now I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, so like $12 to $15 for a ticket, and then another $15 for food, and then another like $5 to $8 for a beverage, and you're up at that like $30 per viewing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly going to be the subscription services, those coming back, I think will be huge. And then I think it's too, just the fact that, you know, I have been to the theater to go see smaller independent movies that aren't on
streamers. So like, they're not going to be for a while.
Yeah. Like I saw Wheatley's, In the Earth, and I saw, that Colin Farrell Voyagers, and I just saw them in a theater cause I'm vaccinated at this point and they're not streaming. And so I think HBO is just living off the fact that it's convenient. What they're doing is super convenient, and people want to watch movies at home if they can.
You know, especially when the streaming services are owned by larger parent companies, and they can afford to do that. Like, as an AT&T customer, my HBO Max is free. It's part of my cell phone plan.
Yeah.
So I'm not giving anything up to have that. If you're a Verizon customer, Disney Plus is free. So
if you get the unlimited data plan, which I have, and that's why I got Disney Plus for free. But yeah, continue. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, it's that same thing. They're baking all of this stuff in, and it's hard, you know, even if you've got the expendable income, to not be like, well, wouldn't I rather do this, or wouldn't I rather, you know, be able to splurge a little more on food? Like we're about to get into Mortal Kombat. Last night, you know, my fiance ordered us a charcuterie platter from like a vegan restaurant that's down south, and you know, that charcuterie plate was like $20-something, but we're watching the movie for free at home.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is gonna be the biggest thing, is I feel like by summertime, AMC or Alamo is going to hit first, and they're going to strike first about their subscription services. How are they going to roll it back out to everybody? I don't know, because as we kind of worried about Alamo was bought out, but they said that they're not changing anything about their services, which I hope they stay true to that, knocking on wood right now, that they keep that word. And then, you know, AMC, I think they're going to get to a point of desperation at this point. Because, yeah, like we mentioned, there's a lot of movies that you're still going into there and you're still watching, right? So, for instance, like to Brett's point, I want to watch those independent movies. And even though I am vaccinated, like Johnny said, I'm $15 for a movie. If I'm going to Alamo, I'm buying my loaded fries at about $10 to $11. Then I get my Long Island per usual, and I'm at $45 for my viewing experience. And like, I don't know if I can do that every week.
And I kind of wonder if these subscription services, when they come back, if they're gonna have to offer you a little bit more than just a movie. Like, are you gonna have to throw in like a complimentary beverage or a complimentary small popcorn, right, or something as part of I'm part of this membership? Like, you're gonna have to give me, like, what are the other guys not giving me that you're willing to give me for this subscription? I mean, it's what Microsoft's doing with Game Pass Ultimate. They're like, hey, you want to play the show day one for free? Come get us.
Very true.
So it'll be interesting to see how they roll out and how all this plans out as it's coming through. But all in all, I think, Brett, your forecasting of HBO Max late last year, early this year is sticking true. I don't think it's knocking any doors down, but it also is still it's still changing that dynamic of the theaters just a little bit, and us being picky, but I don't think it's going to be the detriment of the theater itself. Yeah. So,
no, I agree. All right, guys. Well, with that being said, the newest offering from HBO Max is Mortal Kombat. We've all seen it. We're going to talk a little about it, spoiler-free to start with, and then we'll get into some spoilers afterwards, because I've got some things I want to ask these two. But before we jump into that, here's a word from our sponsor. And we're back. So, first impressions, guys. I know all three of us probably grew up on these games. All three of us have fond memories of the first movie, not so much of the second. So, guys, initial thoughts on Mortal Kombat 2021.
I'm going to let you go first, Brett.
It's a big miss for me.
Right out of the gates.
I guess my big things kind of coming into it, out of it. Coming into it, I rewatched both Mortal Kombat movies.
I couldn't finish Annihilation. I'm letting you know.
I kind of just like happened into them. Like, I don't know that I was really searching to like it or searching to watch these and like kind of get up to speed with the Mortal Kombat universe. That first one is just like cheesy but fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's missing in this new one is anything that's fun. And like the fun character that they give us,
Kano,
like is a bit of an asshole. And like, you know, we'll get into later in terms of his character arc. But like, other than that, then like, I don't know, am I missing some movie stars? Like, I didn't connect to the lead guy who's, I guess, like an invented new character for the universe.
Yes. We'll get into that later.
Sonya Blade didn't do it for me. Raiden was flat. Like, I thought Kung Lao was good in his limited role, but yeah, just I think a lack of fun was missing from this.
And I will agree with you. I wouldn't say it's a hard miss. It's like, I'll put it this way. I put it on the same level as 95's Mortal Kombat, but I'll explain it this way. 95 literally gave you the Mortal Kombat movie you were looking for without the gore, without like any of that, right? Its story and character development was there. Whereas in this movie, it gave you the gore. It gave you the things that you were looking for in a Mortal Kombat movie. Everything else was bad. Like you're saying, I agree with Brett to his think that all of the characters, I was just like, bro, what are you doing? Now, granted, the two characters who got the most money, the most of their investment was, of course, Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Those two got the most out of their character. And I will say, in terms of video game, like, similarities, those two's character arcs literally, they kept that together, and I enjoy that so much.
Yeah, give me a little more of that prologue, because I think when you open a film up and you've got the written dialogue kind of setting the stage, like, instead, just give me some more of that Scorpion Sub-Zero prologue. Like, why are they there? Why am I supposed to care about Scorpion and his family? Why am I supposed to hate Sub-Zero other than he's obviously not a good dude? Instead of just giving me like a little written title card.
Right.
Only so many franchises can do that sort of sequence, and it works. It's the original trilogy being one of them. And I think it just didn't work here. And I think that that prologue, I was basically like just simmering on that prologue for the next 45 minutes to an hour after.
And that's what I was going to get into. And that's my issue is if you're going to jump load us into the third act, give us the big third act, which we're going to talk to in a spoiler talk. Don't give me an hour of exposition and character development that doesn't go anywhere, right? Like you said, Cole Young, we're not going to get into him yet, but was bad. And to be honest with you, again, playing these games since I was a kid, Liu Kang was just so one-dimensional. And I'm just sitting here like, do we forget how great, like, as much as he is, like, I call him the Goku of Mortal Kombat, that's who he is. He was so one-dimensional. Liu Kang, as much as he had his moments, and we're going to get to that again later, he was always one-dimensional. And like you said, Raiden was flat, but Raiden is more of like a assertive flat and more confident about what he's saying. And I don't feel like this Raiden did that in this movie.
So you appreciate the wooden Raiden over the whitewashing Christopher Lambert.
No,
I'm saying Christopher Lambert as Raiden, as much as it's like, isn't he supposed to be Asian? It's still like, he gives those dialogue, like some of his line delivery is just like, this is hilarious. And
no,
I love it.
I love it. No, don't get me wrong. That's what I'm saying. So like with Chris Lambert versus, I forgot the guy who's playing this Raiden, the difference with
personality,
Chris, yes. He just felt like Raiden in 95, despite it being cheesy, he had personality, whereas this Raiden, you're just like, dude, where are you? Like, are we just playing flat the entire movie? And I think that's what my biggest issue was. And even Shang Tsung, like, we're gonna get into Shang Tsung in a moment, but he was decent.
He
enough
was decent, but you can't compare that to the 95. Yo, so like that guy was just eating those lines up. He was like, yes,
I was meant to be this role. I don't want him to be cheesy like old guy from the guy who plays Shang Tsung in 95, but give me something a little bit more to chew on. And, damn it. Spoiler. We're in spoiler-free territory. Despite what he does.
You can tell those people in the 95 movie were having fun.
Yeah,
like,
right.
When they were just pointing at the camera and saying, like, yo, brother, this is mine.
Well, like,
just eating up the scene.
You know, and I think it's interesting, too, to look at these two directors, because, I mean, the 95, that's Paul Anderson, who...
Resident Evil. Just destroy video game property.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, the guy keeps working and keeps making movies. Like, he kind of knows
obviously
his audiences.
And like working with him.
Likes working with him. And like, I think he's not ever trying to make a great movie. He's making what he's out there to make. And, you know, 95 was like, here's a gross IP Mortal Kombat video game. Parents are upset about it. See what you can go do with it. This is like, we want you to build a universe out of this IP. And
we want you to satisfy all the people who, for the last 25 years, have been saying, like, as fun as 95 Mortal Kombat was, where's the fatalities? Where's the gore?
Yes.
Where's the brutality? Yes. Like, where is that? That's what I want out of my Mortal Kombat film. It needs to be serious.
And yeah, I think that is the line that probably was, like, on every script notice, this needs to be serious. And it's just like,
and like,
we're talking about a goofy tournament.
Right. And I think that's what I'm so mad about. And I was talking to this with my brother, and my brother is ironically on the opposite side of it. He's like, but it's so good. I was like, but here's the difference. And I think this is what makes Mortal Kombat the gaming franchise it was, and why I think that I feel the way, why I still feel validated in what I am, is like Brett said, it's a tournament of killing people, right? And we're gonna leave it for spoiler talk about the plot of this movie, but I feel like the issue, my biggest issue, was the plot of the movie. And again,
it wasn't a tournament.
See, I was gonna wait for the spoiler talk, but since we're there, yeah, this movie is a pre of the tournament. How are you gonna make a movie called Mortal Kombat and it's the pre Mortal Kombat? Like, I do not get it. Granted, you do some things at the end, which we'll get to later. You kind of like try to negate that. No, bro. This is supposed to be Mortal Kombat,
I remember kind of pausing the movie about an hour in, and I was like, "Where's the tournament? What's going on here?" I was like, what? Why are we having all this buildup? And then, like, and then the whole plot of the movie is we're not having a tournament. Okay, well, cool.
Thank you.
I think the other thing that, like, and kind of getting back to that prologue, and you know, kind of the great fight scene there is one. Yeah, they hit the plateau in terms of fight scenes.
You got a known actor too,
right?
Yes.
I thought though the film was just edited in a way that did not do justice to any of the fighting then. Like, we're at a point now with action where, like, you know, it's guys like, you know, in the John Wick movies, Stiskowski and I'm forgetting the other director's name, but those guys were making action that, like, is viewable and has kinetic energy. Or like a guy like Gareth Evans doing, you know, working with Joe Sub-Zero on the Raid movies and such, and like those action set pieces are just next level, and they're on such a smaller budget than, you know, something like Mortal Kombat, yet like the action was edited in ways that I was just like, some of the geography of the fight scenes aren't making sense. And
would you love to see somebody like a Gareth Edmonds come in absolutely and do a second movie and bring Joe back?
he would crush something like this. And I think it's, you know, if he could have originally come up with this idea, I think Gareth Evans does this, but it's
like Timu.
Yeah. Like Timo would be that would be the visceralness that I want in this movie. And it's, you know, we're kind of referencing the Night Comes for Us, which is like so kinetic, but like has a sense of humor, I think, in how serious it is and how graphic these fight scenes are. Whereas this movie like doesn't have that playfulness, I don't think.
No,
I guess it's there, but just not to the level I guess desire.
And I think that's the biggest issue with this movie. And I feel like even though Kano was supposed to be that, oh, okay, this is our comedic relief of the movie. And like you said, I think, and I hate to say it, Kano was the best part of this movie, but that shouldn't be the best part of your movie, right? And to you guys' point also, and I'm going to piggyback off of what you're saying about like the choreography, because I have a bone to pick with it. Another thing that kind of bothered me was, you know, you do the lore, like I said, we talked about, you try to world build this movie, right? But you only really world build Scorpion and Sub-Zero's story and their rivalry, which again, a lot of us,
don't forget our boy Cole Young. we're gonna
get into that in a moment. And but you get into that backstory, and again, any of us who are Mortal Kombat fans know about this lore, so it's kind of cool that you did it for everybody who's not a non-moviegoer, but that's the only lore you kind of go into. You don't really explain the realms.
Yeah, even the realms, like you said, the 9 year or 9 tournaments in a row, like we all know that, right?
We know that this, the 10th tournament coming, and it's like you kind of make that apparent at the beginning of the movie, then never bring up the 10th tournament that hasn't happened in this movie at all. You stop bringing it up, right? But like my thing is like you could have talked about why Raiden and Shang Tsung hate each other. Or who I think is the biggest ball that they dropped in the movie is you don't even go why Melina is siding with Shang Tsung in the first place. You don't explain any of that. If she's supposed to be your quote-unquote heavy besides Sub-Zero, if she's your second heavy, you don't go into any of her like backstory, which I think in Mortal Kombat is so good. But, you know, to each its own. And then Liu Kang and Shang Lao were supposed to be like, oh yeah, they're from the light. Okay. But what the hell is this supposed to mean?
They're filling our Asian quota, and they're going to be, you know, just like most of us Asians, we're going to be very quiet, respectful.
But I was kind of disappointed, because if you're going to do world building, do world building. Don't do a whole hour of world building that literally makes, in my opinion, zero to no sense, and then be like, but here's your gore that you asked for.
Well, because it's Sonya and Cole get the kind of prolonged second act backstory that they don't care.
And I mean, even before that, Sonya, she's kind of relegated to, not only is she a woman, she doesn't have the marking, so you get to sit on the sideline while the rest of us do stuff.
Exactly.
It just sounds like this Mortal Kombat tournament has really loose rules.
Yeah, very, very loose rules.
The realm rules, like, again, all right, like, how I feel about the 95 version and how I feel about this one, Raiden is not supposed to be intermingling with the worlds and dealing and interfering in things. Okay, cool, but, you know, what he did in this movie and then what he did in 95, it's like, all right, yeah, you're bending the rules, and Shang Tsung going around and killing off fighters, and the other realms are just, and the older gods are not noticing that. Which, again, sorry for normal, like, for people who don't are in the lore of Mortal Kombat. I'm sorry they never explain any of the elder gods, the other realms, and what happened in all the centuries, but this is what happens. And you're sitting there like, again, as a Mortal Kombat fan, you're like, okay, cool, but how is Sue and Joe are gonna ever understand what the hell any of this means? And so I'm not gonna get in that horse anymore, but yeah, you understand my frustrations on that.
All right, well, with that being said, and we had plenty to say, let's go ahead and dive into some spoilers now, because I think we've held our tongues a little bit long enough. Biggest spoiler, Cole Young sucks. Can we just agree on that?
Fuck, all right, excuse me. I almost had to go on the hard word here, but he sucks. He really, really sucks. And his Arcana, which they're considering is his, like, big fatality, his energy, what makes him different from everybody else, is just having an armor and, like, two, what do you call those things?
Are they, like, Tomfas?
Tomfas, some stupid shit. And that's what his Arcana is, seriously?
And it was like I told Julian before we started recording, they literally had a poster in the gym of who that Cole character should have been.
Johnny Cage.
Oh, well, I mean, that gets into like the fun little, like, why not have a Johnny Cage in this movie? Because this movie was lacking personality.
Some personality.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm just like, all right. If we just switch Cole out, put Johnny Cage in there, and have Johnny Cage be almost like he was in 95, I want to be something. I want to feel like I matter instead of all these stupid-ass action movies I'm doing. Bro, that would have been a great person to be pinpointed.
I want to prove to everybody I am a real fighter.
Like, what do you think was the, like, why invent a new character for this movie?
Oh, because we need a reason for Scorpion to come back. We need a reason for him and Sub-Zero to fight. And so to have a dagger that has his blood, him and his blood share the same blood on the dagger, and all of a sudden Scorpion comes back.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think the cool idea, the interesting thing would have been make a Mortal Kombat set in the 1800s and just do the prologue for 90 minutes, and we would have been like, they did it.
But to each his own. Like, that was my biggest thing with this movie. It was like, as soon as they did it, I was like, don't tell me Cole is a descendant of Scorpion. Please don't. And he is. God damn it.
All right. He's just a plain as day character. Like, and don't care about him.
He like, just didn't have movie star charisma. Like, for me, that's like the thing. Like, and it's, you know, it's nothing you can that's really tangible, but it's just like, within 15 minutes I was like, this guy's not holding my attention.
But if you're gonna already have three stoic Asian leads in Liu Kang, Kung Lao, and Raiden, if you've already got three, do you really need to throw in a fourth?
Right.
And to your point, I think that what they were trying to do with this movie, which I give you an E for effort, is that they were trying to make it as closely as they could with the games. And I understand that because most of the original fighters in the first games were like Asian oriented, right? And I appreciate that. I appreciate the settlement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ever since the casting announcement started coming out, I was like, oh shit, we got Joe. Fucking, what's his name? Kaneda?
Hirosuke Sanada.
Yeah. Sanada. Like, you got those two guys in there as your big bad heavy, like Scorpion and Sub-Zero. You give them like some lead credit, but then I mean they're lost behind masks and subtitles.
Masks, subtitles, and you know, and then Sub-Zero is just in this fire world that don't really know a whole lot about, that they don't give us a whole lot of backstory. How does Sub-Zero get back to the Earth realm? Scorpion, yes. Yeah, how does Scorpion get back to the Earth realm? I didn't really understand that. He just kind of appears.
He got banished to the deepest depths of hell because of his lust for revenge.
Revenge, and found a way to control those fires. Again, if you're not deep into the Mortal Kombat knowledge, you're like, okay,
how did he get back, though?
So
the link, that's why you had Cole.
That's why you had Cole, because okay. That's why I'm saying, when you share blood with the blood of your descendant on the same dagger, that's how Scorpion became...
Okay.
Came into Earthrealm again. And that's why he said, I quote, "You freed me." Meaning he's able to travel around realms now. That's how he's able to do it. Besides basically being, hey, we need you for this tournament. We're taking you out of hell. And now you can roam the different realms. So you can do that. That would have been an easier explanation. But we had to have Cole have some significance in this movie.
How often are these tournaments?
In Mortal Kombat... Well, in the actual games, it only happened, what, maybe twice? Maybe? Well,
I just know you have to lose 10 times in a row, but I don't know how often.
Like, is that like every 100 years we have like one
Olympics,
of
these? It's every four.
I don't know. I was going to say, it's almost once every generation. Like I said, in the games, like even the new Mortal Kombat games.
Yeah, because I guess they alluded to that Scorpion's character was like the and that was in like the 1600s.
Right,
he was like the last one that actually like won.
Okay,
right.
Okay, so Scorpion and Sub-Zero had been through some Mortal Kombats potentially before.
They were normal fighters at this point. They were both between their ninja clans, and they were in the Mortal Kombat. It seems
and
like
then you saw like the newspaper clipping of like Nightwolf.
Which I would assume would
have been in like the 1700s or 1800s.
Yeah.
Because he's a Native American.
I would be like, that would have been cool to see Nightwolf. But to each his own.
Hey, they're clearly doing sequels.
They can do some flashbacks like, hey, check out. We've got the Native American guy. We've got the Asian guy.
Can we also talk about the two people who I felt like was completely also punked out? How you have Shao Kahn in like a mural, but you never show him? One. And two, can we talk about, can they stop doing my boy Goro as bad as they do every time?
Wow.
Can we talk about that?
He got nut checked in the original one. And then in this one, it was like all of a sudden Cole got his armor.
His Arcana armor. Yes. It killed Goro. Dude has four arms who is five times his size. Yeah.
Like, at least in the 95 one, you got to see Goro, like, wreck some fools.
Thank you!
Goro just got screwed over this. I mean, on top of it, like, how about the daughter and wife not running for the hills with a sighting of Goro? I mean, handle that pretty calmly. I think
Oh no. And I'm going to run my truck over this big dude that's over 10 feet tall. I'm going to just run my car over him. Oh, that didn't work. Damn it. Like, okay.
But yeah, like...
All right. I guess you go long enough seeing your dad just get the shit kicked out of him for $200. Eventually, like, you just go numb.
But yeah. I just... Goro's like that character that you're like, oh, I want to see him on screen. I want to see what he can do. I want to see what he can unleash on people. And it's just like... He's gonna fight in a farm, like,
and then don't even rip anybody's arms off. Nothing like that. He just throws Cole around. I'm like, bro, can you rip him? Like in the mural that you showed in the Mortal Kombat realm when you probably won, show me ripping somebody's
pieces apart. Well, because that's supposed to be the thing. Is like he's the champion of Outworld. for like the last 9 tournaments.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, why is he dead to a dude who...
Well, they also showed like an artwork of, what's his name, like Kolokan?
Oh, Shao Kahn. Yeah.
Not Shao Kahn.
Oh, no, no.
The one with all the feathers that's kind of like blue.
Damn, what's his name?
Konakon?
Konakon, something like that. I know who you're talking about, but not Shao Kahn, my bad. Yeah. But that's why I'm like, okay, all right, cool. And then the other thing is, which, again, praise to this movie, because I feel like they're understanding what happens. Yes, you got deep cuts of people that barely were in the actual games, like Reiko, and I keep forgetting that lady's name. Minotaur? What? She was only in one game. Like, Reiko was in, like, 3 games, so I know that much. But the girl who with the wings...
Natara.
Yep, there you go. Natara, she was only in the game. She was only in like 1 game. And I'm like, okay, all right. I see you guys going into the deep cut so you don't kill off anybody serious.
I think my favorite death was hers. That
Kung Lao using his fatality.
Was, like, that was fun. Like, inventive. Like that.
It gave an excuse to have a line from the game with the flawless victory.
Yeah, like... I'm trying to think, like, what was y'all's, like, favorite death scene? Because that's what we're here for, right?
Liu Kang's. I mean, it sucked that up until him unleashing, like, the fire dragon, he was very, like, passive and, like, he seemed to really be liking that beaded bracelet. Like, it seemed like every shot of him, he was just caressing those beads.
So, for me, since y'all already used those two, I'd have to say my next was Jax. No, actually, Scorpions. Scorpion, because they did the OG. Yeah, they did the OG original, like, fatality, where he takes his mask off, blows the breath of fire down on you, and then, like, you burn into ash. Like, okay, cool. I enjoyed that.
I mean, the other cool stuff I think we saw in the trailer, which was, like, Sub-Zero manipulating the blood into a dagger, and then, like, basically, like, stabbing you, grabbing the blood, freezing it, and then hitting you with the frozen blood.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool. And a really quick Easter egg is, again, what we're talking about off air, Johnny, is when Jax and Reiko was fighting in one of the original battle arenas in the first.
The pit, which has been in, like, every game since ever.
And so, like Johnny and I were talking about, you would assume that, like, in the games, if somebody's in the pit, you're doing the arena uppercut. Fatality. Yes, where you uppercut them, they fall down, and the spikes kills them, right? Nah, Jax does his brutality. I'm like, all right. Okay, I guess I'll take that. I'll take it. But, yeah, I think those are the only other things. Like I said, the gore in here is really good. It's just everything surrounding it. I was like, okay. Oh, back to our point about the choreography and the fighting. The only fight, in my personal opinion, 2 fights, where I feel like whoever was the original, like, choreographer or whoever was filming everything, the cinematographer, whoever that person is, the only time that he must have got some actual professional help to help them with that was those 2 fight scenes. Because those 2, they're cut and they're filmed in a way where you see everything around it. And I'm like, wow, why is these the only 2 scenes that are cut in a way where I can see all the fight sequences? And then with Liu Kang versus Cabal, you're sitting there half-ass seeing all of the action sequences. And I'm just like...
Yeah, you're doing a lot of quick cuts. You're being very, like... Batman Begins, Christopher Nolan type shooting with these fighting scenes. And,
yes.
And I was under the impression that the whole reason that they got a lot of the talent that they did was because these were people that actually, like, knew how to fight.
Yeah.
And you wanted to make it believable. And yet you're doing a lot of these quick cuts and these more, like, wire movement type fighting styles that you can't really see what's going on, and you can't see the talent that's under the masks and prosthetics. No. And other, you know, even the Sub-Zero Scorpion fight, you've got some scenes, but then a lot of it is still very, like, choppy. It's cut kind of awkward. Yeah. As opposed to just giving us a wide frame of 2 guys who know how to fight, like, these 2, Joe and Sonata. Like, these guys have done business in some other movies.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say with, because I would assume this movie's going to do good numbers.
There's
going to be a lot of excitement.
It's going to get about 2 to 3 million people watching.
what do you want in that sequel then?
Because the actual tournament.
We all know that this was, I mean, this is like pure IP. Like, they made this to make more.
And to your point, and they said if this movie is a success, they're going to do two movies, right? They're going to do two extra movies. But to your point, I think that this movie kind of already tried to set itself to be a sequel, right? And, you know, when Shang Tsung goes, he says, oh, their death is only a means to another way to, like, get my warriors. I'm like, okay, so you're telling me is you're going to get Sub-Zero and Goro and please, Melina, out of hell or the Netherrealm and bring them back to fight against you. Cool. Looks like we're not killing people right now, or we're finding another ways to survive. Bet. Cool. Love
it. It's not Mortal Kombat. It's Immortal Kombat. that was a free one.
Speaking of, I mean, what's always been synonymous with the 95 film, how'd y'all feel about the incorporation of the old...
I mean,
everybody knows that song.
It was
my first compact disc I ever had as like a 10-year-old.
I felt so bad for that composer because in my mind, I'm just like, why do you have original score? I'm just waiting for it. I'm waiting for the drop. Just give me the drop, man.
Just give me the dun, 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 dun. Like, we know it's coming, right?
We know it's coming. And this was like a no-win for a composer coming on.
I'm sorry, whoever, like, I was thinking about that when they said this news about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when they were filming for it. I was like, whoever's the composer, bless your heart, because there's no way you're competing with what we got in 95. Like, there was no way. But what is the composer done besides...
So it's this guy, Benjamin Wolfish. Okay. He did Blade Runner. He did It.
Ooh, okay.
So, I mean...
That's some solid work, man.
Solid credits. He's going to be... he's going to be the composer on The Flash.
So he works with Muschietti a lot. Okay.
Yeah, interesting. Because, yeah, this was like a... Again, like...
By the numbers score.
Yeah, it didn't create anything that you're going to remember in your head.
No. We had a lot of, like, generic, like, Eastern ninja-type sounds. And then we got, like, some throwback stuff.
Oh. Damn. So we got a generic-ass movie with generic-ass sounds. Sounds very-ass generic. Okay. This makes sense. This completely makes sense now.
Like, I can only imagine, like, Little League me with my Sony Walkman CD player just jamming out to Before Baseball Game. Just dum, 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 dum,
dum, dum. That's the best. How do they fix this movie?
I feel like what has to happen, and we all are in agreement on this, the next movie has to be a tournament. You have to do the tournament. I get that you're trying to ramp up everybody and get everybody together for the tournament. Because if I remember correctly, that was the last full moon before the next tournament. So that means they got less than 4 weeks. Or it depends on... Yeah, they got less than a month, month and a half before the next tournament, right? So I'm like, you gotta get your people. So I
mean, here's a quick one. Put Cole on the back burner. Like,
but okay, you already invested so much on
them. Now Scorpion now has a way to travel between the realms. Cool, Cole, we have no use for you.
But he
give me Johnny Cage.
But he has to be there because they spent so much money on him, though.
I think that Johnny Cage casting is going to be really interesting.
Depends on who they get. Yeah.
Well, right, because I think right away you're like, we can't go another unknown. This has to be a movie star, and it has to be a movie star with some personality. Right. So
that was gonna be my question: who would fit that role?
I think they're pulling somebody from like the WWE. I think they pull a big name from the WWE. I have no idea.
John Cena or somebody.
You can't do John. Yeah, I think you do somebody like The Miz. Maybe you do somebody like him.
Yeah, I don't really know too many WWE.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm doing.
Or do you do a racial recasting and put somebody like The Rock in there?
Rock's too big for
too
this.
Big. If you see, we saw the photo, and he looks like I hate to say it, you're a run of the mill white guy.
He looks like Jean Claude Van Damme.
Yeah. Where can we find another Jean Claude?
So I don't know. It'll be interesting. But I think you got to film the action sequences a little bit better. And don't sell the movie as a Mortal Kombat movie if it's another goddamn prequel. Just don't do it. I think that's the biggest thing. I think my expectations would have been so much lower if you would have told me, hey, this is not the actual tournament. This is the setting before that. Cool. I need to know that we're not watching a damn tournament.
I mean, do you really want to do another, like, stupid subtitle, like Mortal Kombat Awakening or something? Because, I mean, that's what this movie felt like. Like, this was not Mortal Kombat. This was a prequel.
This was a prequel.
That's why, I don't know. Just get somebody who actually knows how to make action sequences and just give me a story where we're straight into the combat, I mean, the tournament, and they're trying to figure their shit out. And if they do it right, Shang Tsung fights or competes with Liu Kang and actually uses, you know, Kung Lao's presence to try to kill Liu Kang. Now, that'll be another bold move that they do in the next movie. If they kill Liu Kang, I would be down for that. Like, do something bold is what I would say. Action, do better action, do something bold. Two things.
Fair enough. I think that about wraps it, doesn't it, guys?
I think so. All right, really final quick.
Rating?
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah. What's your rating?
So I've been fluctuating between like a 2 and a 2.5. I think this will sit at a, you know, a 2.5, and I think I'm never going to watch this again.
Yeah, I think I'm right around the same, 2.5. I don't foresee myself watching it again until, you know, maybe to ramp up for the sequel.
I had to watch it twice to make sure that I was right in my thesis. And both times, 2.5, I will not watch this again, and I'll just wait and go cold into the second movie.
Right on. All right, then, gentlemen. Well, I guess that calls to the end of Matinee Talk, episode 59. And where can the kids find y'all?
You guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens, and you guys can also find me on Letterboxd at King Julian Owens as well.
You can find me on Letterboxd as well. Right now, I'm working on the top 100 films box office wise of all time. I'm trying to knock out that. I'm at 82, 83 right now.
Very nice. 100. Very nice.
All right.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder and Letterboxd at Johnny Boy Wonder. With that being said, take care, everybody.